Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Let's go to Hawaii. Hi, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Rebecca, and today is May the 14th. Well, today we are going to someplace very, very beautiful and spectacular. We are going to journey to Hawaii. And today's article is our travel article for the month, Hawaii Touches the Heart. And I'm really happy to have our super outdoorsy friend, Linda, on the program.
Hi, Rebecca. Hi, everyone. It is great to be here. I'm really looking forward to talking about this article because it's on Hawaii.
Yes. How can you not like Hawaii? When we were just walking into the studio, someone asked us, how are you today? We're like, well, it has to be a good day because we are talking about Hawaii.
Yes. It's a paradise on earth.
And Linda, I know that you have been to Hawaii.
I have.
Can you tell us a little bit about your experience? Can you describe Hawaii, where in Hawaii you went? Because there are 8 major islands in Hawaii, plus a lot of many, 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 many tiny islands and other little landforms, many of them that there's nobody who lives there.
So that's true.
I think there's over 137 islands and other landforms, but there's the 8 big ones.
Right.
Can you tell us where you went and what was your experience like?
Sure. Well, I flew from Taipei to Honolulu, and Honolulu is the capital, state capital, and it is on the island of Oahu, which is the most developed island out of all the Hawaiian islands. So there's like, Honolulu is actually quite a significant city, and it is filled with tourists. That's where you have Waikiki Beach. And from there, I went to Kauai. That's where I spent most of my time. So Kauai, I went from the most developed island to the least developed island on Kauai. It's a smaller island and it's more natural. It is where they filmed Jurassic Park, one of the Jurassic Parks.
Wow.
And so those very unique, that mountainscape, because those mountains formed, you know, from volcano, or well, from lava coming up from the earth, they have a very special shape and look to them. So they were recognizable from shows that have been movies that have been filmed in Hawaii. So it was amazing to be there. I loved it. It lived up to my expectations because it's just so beautiful.
That is amazing. Is Hawaii someplace you'd like to go back to in the future?
Yes, definitely, because I only got to go to 2 of the islands.
Right.
You mentioned there's also Maui. There's also the Big Island of Hawaii, which we'll be talking about today. And so I would like to go visit the places that I haven't been to because each island is unique in itself.
Yes, and Hawaii is quite amazing because all these islands were formed, they're basically volcanoes, right? Mm-hmm. Like they are basically formed from volcanic activity in that area. So I think the landscapes that you see will be absolutely different. It'll look like another planet.
Mm-hmm. It's so rich. And yeah, like the scenery, the landscape is just amazing. Like you can't get that view anywhere else.
Yes. Oh, now I want to go even more. Well, let's go to the Big Island. So the Big Island, you can see in our article, you can see that map of Hawaii. You can see the Big Island is that big one. It's right on the right-hand side at the very right. You see the Big Island. And the Big Island, it's also called Hawaii. So when we talk about Hawaii, we are referring to the Big Island. But usually when people talk about Hawaii, we are referring to the whole cluster of islands or the archipelago of islands, the archipelago of Hawaii. So let's go to the Big Island. Let's get into our first reading for today.
Hawaii touches the heart. Tradition makes for a moving experience at Mauna Lani. "Hut ho!" the steersman bellowed, So I switched sides, gripping the T end of the paddle and digging into the glassy blue beneath me. The only sounds: water splashes as the canoe cut forward and the labored breath of other paddlers. But why were tears rolling down my face? I've done sunrise canoe paddles before, off the shores of Waikiki, off Kauai. They're a fun touristy feature at a lot of resorts. Like many Californians, I've been to the Hawaiian Islands more than a few times. In fact, statistics from the Hawaiian Tourism Authority show that Southern California is Hawaii's largest source market, making up 30% of all visitors. I'm just one of millions drawn to the unique culture and unforgettable landscapes these islands offer.
Linda, we start the article with the author in a canoe.
Yes. So canoeing is a popular sport in Hawaii. And this phrase that the steersman bellows, that he shouts loudly in a deep voice, hut ho. Actually, someone on the boat will say, on the canoe, will say hut. And that's an indication for all of the paddlers to switch sides.
Oh.
Yes. So you...
Switch side, you mean like the side for your paddle?
Yes.
So if you were paddling on your right, mm-hmm. now you have to paddle to the left.
Right. So when someone says hut, that's the indication you have to switch sides, and then you switch and then you say ho as you put your paddle in the water. So I have gone outrigger canoeing once. I did it in Taidong, and it was quite an experience. So we had someone, a coach who, I think she trained in Hawaii, so she was very familiar. And this particular type of canoeing.
Yeah, can you explain to us what is outrigging canoeing? Because that is a different kind of canoeing.
Yeah, so you have a boat, like a canoe. Like, so the boat part of the hull is a canoe, but you have like an arm attached to it, the outrigger. That's okay. The thing attached to it. And then the boat as a whole, you call an outrigger. But what makes it special is having that arm. So it's like a second piece that's attached to one side of the canoe. And in Hawaiian, that's called an ama, A-M-A.
And what is the purpose of that arm or the ama?
So it balances the boat.
Oh.
And it provides more stability because these canoes you are using in the ocean where there are huge waves and you are tossed about by the current and the waves. And so it offers more stability to the vessel. And you often, I did canoeing in a six-person canoe.
Right.
And so that's referred to as OC6, so outrigger canoe six, because it has six people. And so three people will be paddling on their right side and three will be paddling on their left side. And when you hear a hut, then both sides switch so that you can use both sides and not get too tired on one side.
Oh, that's the reason you do the switch.
Yeah.
So that you don't get tired out from just doing one side. Because like we can imagine, like if you work out, if for example you go to the gym and you lift weights and you keep using your right arm, and your right arm will get very tired. So mm-hmm. you need to switch hands. So in that canoe, you're actually sitting in one row.
Yes.
Right? So it's not double row. It's that you sit in one row.
Right. It's different from dragon boat where you have two people in one row. And with dragon boat, you only paddle on one side.
Yeah. Yes. But here you switch sides. Okay, that's mm-hmm. interesting. Okay, thank you. That's really illuminating. That's ho. And the steersman.
Yes.
Who is the steersman?
The steersman is the person at the back of the canoe, back of the boat. And that person is steering. Like, they have a big responsibility for keeping the canoe going in the correct direction. And also, that is who you get your instructions from, like, tell you when to go, when to stop. And here, the steersman is telling the paddlers when to switch sides.
And then he's doing it very loudly, because here it says the steersman bellowed.
Mm-hmm.
So when you bellow, it's to shout loudly, right?
Yes.
And here we have the definition, to shout loudly in a deep voice. So they switch the side, And then, well, this sounds like a really beautiful scene.
Right. Yeah. So just give a description of the paddle. So the T end is the top of the paddle that you're holding onto, and then you dig into the glassy blue. So the glassy blue is the ocean.
Yes, what a beautiful description. And then here we also talk about the canoe cutting forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's cutting forward through the water.
The water, yeah.
Yeah, and then because, you know, like everyone is working very hard, you have labored breath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like people are breathing hard because they're exerting a lot of energy.
Yes, it's a workout. There's a lot of similarity with outrigger like paddling and dragon boat paddling. It's not entirely the same. I learned that because the coach was like, don't bend forward as much as you would in dragon boat. You know?
Right,
so,
right.
So the technique is a little different, but overall it's very similar.
It's very similar. And then what is interesting is, well, this is really hard work, but here it says, why are tears rolling down my face?
Yeah.
Have you ever gone paddling and started crying?
I don't think so. I probably would only have tears come to my face because it was so hard.
Yeah,
I was exerting so much energy. Yeah, and I wanted to stop. But yeah, not from emotions. Here, tears are rolling down her face because she is emotional. She's crying.
Yes, and then here it goes on to say that it's not the first time she's done a sunrise paddle, right?
No,
it's not the first time. So when you do a sunrise canoe paddle, it just means that you're doing it at sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
This is before the sun rises because you want to see the sunrise when you're on the sea.
And it's
and
so beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yeah, you get to see the sunrise like come up, you know, from the horizon, like above the ocean, and you get the reflection. It's really beautiful.
It's really beautiful. So she's done sunrise paddles before, and then she tells us where she's done it. She's done it off the shore of Waikiki, where we just told us that is in Honolulu, and off Kauai, and that's where you also went before,
yes.
Right?
But unfortunately, I wasn't into outrigger canoeing at that time, so I never got a chance to do outrigger canoeing in Hawaii.
For your next trip.
Yes.
And then let's go on a little bit. So this author she's definitely not from Hawaii.
Right.
So it goes on to say she's from California.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a really interesting statistic here.
Yeah. Californians make up 30% of all the visitors that go to Hawaii.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a significant portion.
Yeah.
But you just, like, California is the closest, like, land mass to Hawaii. So it's very easy to fly from California to Hawaii.
Yeah. But I looked up the statistics. There is about 8 million. Hawaii is not very big, but it has a lot of visitors.
Mm-hmm.
Like in 2025, just for January to October, they had already 8 million visitors.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people from all over the world do visit Hawaii.
Yes.
But California, and here in particular, Southern California, is where most of the visit, I mean, where 30%, almost one-third of visitors are from Southern California.
Yeah, and just Southern California. Yeah, not even the entire state. Yeah, because it's, I can understand the appeal. If you're that close, you can probably get good flight deals,
yes.
Good tickets to Hawaii. Why not?
Why not? Yes.
And when I was there, I noticed also a big portion of tourists are also Japanese.
Yes.
Because it's also easy to fly from Japan to Hawaii.
Yes.
You could even pay in Japanese yen at stores. Which I was like, wow, so surprised.
That's really amazing. But it seems like Japan has a long history in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was a period of time, I think it was probably the 1990s, when Japan's economy was doing very, very well. And Japanese businesses and people went all over the world buying up properties and, you know, buying up these beautiful places. And Hawaii was one of these places where there were a lot of Japanese business corporations that entered,
mm-hmm.
I think around the 1990s. So Japan has a long presence in Hawaii.
It does,
well,
yes.
We need to get into the second part of our article, and we will talk more about the resort that we are traveling to today. It's called the Mauna Lani.
Lani. Mm-hmm.
Let's go to the Mauna Lani.
The Mauna Lani. So why was I getting choked up during this paddle trip at Mauna Lani Resort off the Big Island's Kohala Coast? The Mauna Lani Resort sprawls over 32 oceanfront acres along the verdant strip of coast on Hawaii Island's northwest side, where lava flows over the past two centuries have created a lunar-like landscape, broken only by the green belt near the ocean. Francis Brown, an important land developer in this part of Hawaii, partnered with the Tokyu Corporation to create the Mauna Lani. Fun fact, the Japanese architect created the hotel in the shape of an arrow that points toward Japan. It first opened its doors in 1983. Then in 2018, Auberge Resorts Collection took over the property, its first in the state, relaunching the resort in January 2020 after millions in renovations. Evidence of the renovations is everywhere, from its rooms refreshed with a decor heavy on natural fabrics and earthy textures to its lush Auberge Spa, three swimming pools connected to the beach by a great lawn, state-of-the-art workout facilities, and racket sports, plus a 36-hole golf course.
So here we go to the resort that we'll be talking about for today and also the next 2 days. And here, first she asks, why was I getting choked up?
Mm.
Well, choked up, usually we get choked up. When do we get choked up?
When we're emotional, when something makes us emotional to the point where we're unable to talk. And this is in reference to the question that she had, why were tears rolling down her face? So when you cry, you have tears, and then also you get choked up. You're unable to talk because of the emotion that you're feeling.
And then where she's at? She's at the Mauna Lani Resort. And let's talk a little bit first about this resort and its location. It's located in the Big Island. And this is the Big Island's northwest coast. It's called the Kohala Coast.
Mm-hmm.
It's located at the Kohala Coast. Can you describe this resort a little bit?
Well, the resort sprawls over 32 oceanfront acres. So this is by the ocean,
mm-hmm.
and sprawl means it covers a large area, and 32 acres is pretty significant. And it's along a verdant strip of coast. An area that is verdant, is very green, very lush, has a lot of plant life on it. And this is, like Rebecca said, on the northwest side of Hawaii Island.
Yes. And then we talked about volcanoes at the beginning of the program. And here we can see evidence of volcanic activity mm-hmm. in the past, because we have lava flows over the past two centuries. In the past 200 years, these lava flows have created a really interesting landscape.
Yeah, it's described as lunar-like landscape. So like the moon, a landscape like that, that's broken only by the green belt near the ocean.
Yes.
So it's kind of a contrast of landscapes.
Yes, and maybe that's part of its appeal, because there's such a huge, there's extreme. The landscape formed by the lava flows, and then you have all that green,
mm-hmm.
and then you have that really, really blue, glassy ocean. And then, well, let's talk about the history, because this is a resort that is very rich in history. It's a beloved hotel. It's very rich in history. And the creator or the founder, his name was Francis Brown. Like, we're talking about this area of development, Francis Brown. He bought this piece of land in the 1920s. And then later on, in the 1970s, he partnered and later sold this land to the Tokyu Corporation, a Japanese mm-hmm. development company. And the Japanese development company created the Mauna Lani. Now, here's a very interesting fact.
The Japanese architect who designed the hotel made it in the shape of an arrow that points toward Japan, his home country.
Yes, that must have been a selling point when he was when he was reporting this to the, like, he was explaining his design idea mm-hmm. to the Japanese company. Well, you know, we'll think of Japan because it will be in the shape of arrow that points to Japan.
Yeah.
That is an interesting fact. And this hotel is not young. It first opened its doors in 1983.
Right.
Yes, but if a hotel, it's that old and you still want to be relevant, you probably need to do a lot of updating. Mm-hmm. And here we see that it did get updated.
It did, yes. In 2018, Auberge Resorts Collection got the property, and they did a lot of renovations, millions of dollars in renovations in January 2020.
Yes. And then talking about this Auberge Resorts Collection, this collection is not a fashion collection of clothes. Like, it's not like Chanel's like 2020 fashion collection. No, the Auberge Resorts Collection is the name of a management company mm-hmm. that manages very, very high-end hotels yeah. and resorts and private clubs.
Right.
So this is an American management company that manages resorts. And so they bought the property, they bought the resort, and they spent over $200 million over a period of 2 years to do major renovations before relaunching the hotel in 2020. And what does it say about these renovations?
That evidence of the renovations are everywhere. You can see it in the rooms, like the decor, how it's been decorated. It's heavy on natural fabrics and earthy textures, I guess, to reflect the environment. And it also has a lush spa. I guess that's characteristic of this hotel collection. Three swimming pools.
Wow.
And of course, the beach right there that it's connected to by a great lawn. And state-of-the-art workout facilities. Something that's state-of-the-art, is the most up-to-date, has the latest materials. It's the best because it is state-of-the-art.
And we often use state-of-the-art when we're talking about buildings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like buildings or
technology.
We yeah. use state-of-the-art facility. Like, for example, you might say like Google has a state-of-the-art. They just reopened or they just opened a state-of-the-art headquarters, mm-hmm. for example.
Yeah. So it's all the latest devices and technology, or here in this case, workout equipment. And they also have a place for you to do racket sports and play golf.
Yeah. And what really got me like interested was there is a 36-hole golf course.
Mm.
And that really, I was like, 36 holes, that's a lot. That's a really, really big golf course, because the standard golf course is usually 18 mm-hmm. holes. And then if you don't have a lot of land, sometimes you just get a nine-hole or 12-hole golf course. But mm-hmm. this is a very, very large golf course. It's 36 holes. So for people who love golf, if you're an avid golfer, this is definitely a resort you should consider.
Yeah, yeah.
And I looked a little bit into the history. Part of the reason they have such a big golf course was, we talked about the land developer who first bought up this property, Francis Brown, in the 1920s. Francis Brown was actually someone who specialized in developing golf resorts,
mm-hmm.
like, and basically these huge golf courses. In fact, one of his nicknames was Mr. Golf, like back in his time, Mr. Golf. So both Francis Brown and this Tokyo Corporation, I think the Tokyo Corporation CEO at the time, they both love golf.
Oh,
this was kind of what brought them together. Yes, one of the things that brought them together was they both love golf. I don't mm-hmm. know how they met, but they discovered they love golf, and mm-hmm. I guess they discovered they had other things in common, and that's eventually Francis Brown sold this property to this corporation for them to develop into this incredible resort.
Yeah, and golfing is quite popular in Hawaii, and it's just beautiful because you have all this lush land
yes.
to be able to golf on that and to get the view that you can get there. So it is quite popular, and normally golfing in the U.S. is expensive to do.
Yes.
You have to pay a lot of fees to go golf on a golf course, but I heard it's actually cheaper in Hawaii, and we were going to, but we just didn't have enough time to go golfing
right.
while we were there.
Right. That could be for another trip.
Yes.
For another trip. You have the golfing to do. You have the outrigging canoeing
mm-hmm.
to do.
In Hawaiian waters.
In Hawaiian waters.
And to see an active volcano.
There
yes. are still many active volcanoes in Hawaii on the Big Island. So that is another reason why I'd like to go back and to catch an active volcano.
Yes, to go hiking on an active volcano?
Not that, maybe not that near to, like, don't hike that near.
Okay. We should call them dormant volcanoes, right? I would think, because like an active volcano is something that
is still erupting.
Alive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you can be active volcano, but it's just not, there's no major activity.
Well, in the past, there have been. We were going there, I think, maybe that year, they were active, like they were pretty active. I was like, oh, I want to go back to go see, you know, the erupting volcanoes. So they still are active, but you just have to be careful. Don't ever get too close to an active volcano.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yes, when you're around volcanoes, you still have to be careful.
Yeah,
just like those of us who live in countries or places with typhoons, we have to be very careful with these typhoon alerts. If you live in a place like Hawaii, you probably have to be alert to volcanic activity. Mm-hmm. As well.
Nature can be dangerous, so
yes.
Always take the proper precautions.
Yes, we need to have a healthy respect of nature. Well, friends, that brings us to the end of today's program, but we have two more days to talk about the many wonders of Hawaii, so we hope you definitely do join us again tomorrow for our day two. And that's it for today. I'm Rebecca.
I'm Linda.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.